Thanks for listening to The Kick-Ass Life with David Wood. Stay connected on Facebook, / The Kick-Ass Life, on Twitter, at The Kick-Ass Life, and, of course, at thekickasslife.com.
Hi, this is Dr. Joe Vitale, author of Attract Money Now. You're listening to The Kick-Ass Life Show with David Wood.
Life better?
This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
So g'day, and welcome to the show. And I'm going to be sounding very laid back because I had one of the most laid back days in a long, long time. I'm actually in the Whitsunday Islands. If you don't know what the Whitsundays are, I urge you to go to Google right now and bring up the Whitsunday Islands, because there's nothing I can do to describe the beauty of these islands. 74 islands in this chain, and right off the Great Barrier Reef in Australia. And they were formed about 100 million years ago with some catastrophic volcanic activity sort of formed this sort of area. But the history, from the European standpoint, sort of began in June 4th, 1770, when Captain James Cook, who wasn't a captain then, I think he was a Corporal James Cook, was sailing down the east coast of Australia and charting this whole sort of area. And he originally called it Cumberland Islands. But then when he recalled when he was sailing through them, it was actually in Whitsunday, which is obviously a holiday that is celebrated in Europe. But it is stunning. As I look, I'm sitting on the deck here, looking out across the view. And, I mean, you have to understand, 74 islands, only 8 of them are inhabited. And I'm on one of them. And if you were to look it up, it's Hayman, H-A-Y-M-A-N, Hayman Island. It's this very, very luxurious resort, and we're nestled in this beautiful harbor with white sandy beaches, beautiful tropical palms. And you're going to hear, I moved inside because a moment ago we had like 6 cockatoos sitting on the deck with us, but they're so noisy. and a moment ago Jen was outside eating a bar, and she put it down for a moment, and this cockatoo just jumped on the table, snatched it, and just stood right in front of her with 1 foot holding onto the railing and holding the bar with the wrapper nicely peeled down. But it's awesome. And it's really fitting for today's show, my guest on today's show, because really my guest is a specialist in the area of relationships. And, you know, in this busy schedule we have here, especially here in Australia, I just finished a big event in Sydney, which was awesome. If you didn't listen to the last show, I did a crazy 600-second show with the audience there. And we just did it. I mean, obviously, there wasn't a lot of thought went into it. I just thought, you know what, I want to share with you some of the energy of these beautiful Australian people. So I basically pushed play, and we saw what happened. And so we had 10 minutes of absolute fun. And the show was 3 days, and my event was 3 days. And of course, it takes a lot of energy, a lot of planning, post-planning. But, you know, on a schedule like this, one of the things I always ask myself is, what is the adventure, or what are the moments and the stories I want to create? And Jen and I have talked about that today, about what is the story we want to create from this trip? What's the story? Because I often think about that, you know, that last breath of air, when we're just about to pass away to the other world, so whatever you believe, you know. And, you know, what stories have you collected, the relationships you've collected, the memories you've collected? And so whenever there's an opportunity to create a story, I think living a kick-ass life for me is that. And so we hopped on a plane in Sydney, and we flew up here. It was a couple of hours up to Hayman Island. We fly into a little island called Hamilton Island, and we were picked up on this luxury yacht and brought out an hour to Hayman. And you know, you can hear the, possibly in the background, you can hear the cockatoos, and I've just moved inside slightly just so that you're not bothered by this constant screeching, but it's not really it's a beautiful sound. And, you know, but the idea here was to take some time for our relationship to be together. And we've got some beautiful things planned over the next 3 or 4 days here on Hayman Island. And today was one of the things we planned was to really just veg out and to enjoy the sun. We went, you know, hiking on the beach and walked out into the water. We were we discovered a turtle when we were out there, and probably about 12 or 15 different stingrays we saw today. But really a chill day, a real laid-back, relaxing day where we could just connect with each other. And, you know, we laid on a day bed and just enjoyed the sun. And we're about to go out for a beautiful meal and some sundowners. The sun is not quite setting, but it is absolutely beautifully stunning here. And so when I think about my guest, and she's been a friend of mine for over 20 years, and how we met was kind of funny. And I know we talk about it, or we'll talk about it on the show, so I won't spoil it too much. But, you know, it was one of those chance meetings, and here we are. As I was here in Australia, my boys were actually celebrating Thanksgiving with her and her family and other friends of ours, Mark and Francine and Mike and Donna, and my ex-wife Pam was there with the boys. And just that sort of beautiful collection of friends. And I often think about that, you know, when are you meeting your next best friend? And I think so many people have the potential to be really close friends when you live with an open heart and a great spirit. And so, you know, with her and I, it was a chance meeting. If I hadn't walked over to that day, my kids would not have been celebrating Thanksgiving 2 days ago with her. So anyway, so here we are in the Whitsundays on the east coast of Australia. Absolutely basking in the glow of the Great Barrier Reef and the wondrous topography that only volcanic activity can create, and the gorgeous white beaches. And it's just the breeze is blowing. We were out last night. I took a Hobie cat out, and we went out and we sailed off into the bay here. And we're going to be going again at 7:30 in the morning, taking a Hobie out. But as I look out across this vista right now, the breeze is picking up beautifully, and the Hobies are flying around in the bay here. So with that, you know, my good friend, what I love about her and how she earned the stripes to be on the show, she will be a best-selling author. She hasn't finished her book yet, but she's in the middle of it, and it's going to be, I believe, one of those great best-selling books. But what I've done is I've sent a lot of people who are struggling in their relationships, people who have been married a lot of years and were really sort of, you know, wanting to go separate ways. And I've watched her magically work with them and sort of awaken in them some great questions. And it's not like she could save every marriage. That isn't the case. But we both believe in, I think she calls it, hers is a divine divorce, and I call it an elegant separation. We have this common language around this idea that if people can't be together, then they can certainly they can separate beautifully. But what I've watched her do with the people that have stayed together is I've watched her really awaken doors in them and questions in them that have really ignited a sense of beauty between two people. And certainly, I have used her strategies. I've had her come and teach at my programs, and I certainly have fully endorse her strategies because they've worked for me. So, you know, leading a kick-ass life means you have to have great relationships, and you have to have not have to, but it's important if you have a kick-ass heart. Is that, you know, if you're struggling with someone and a relationship's over, then find the strength inside to be the rock, to be the person who can really create that divine friendship that comes from being together for many, many years. And it does take one side initially, I believe, to do that choice to not bring all of the anger and hatred and all those other things that can emerge with the end of a relationship. But of course, this isn't about ending a relationship. This is about starting a relationship. This conversation is really about, you know, how people can come together and stay together and discover that really, real unique beauty that only two people can share. And this, it doesn't matter whether you're same sex or, you know, whether you're a man and wife. It doesn't matter what your particular preferences are. That this show, that there's the magic is in this show. And in saying that, you know, a good buddy of mine, in fact, who is in a same-sex relationship, Rick. Rick shared with me one time about, you know, how you set up your ground rules. You know, when you're in a relationship with someone, and instead of when you fight, not knowing what to do or how to get through it, that there's a way that you can fight. But you set that up when you're most in love. You say, look, when I'm fighting or when I'm upset, this is what we can do. Let's build a strategy when we're most in love. And I've always remembered that. And I think it's a beautiful, wise wisdom. And, you know, another thing I saw, I was at a wedding the other day of my good friend Courtney and Dan, and they were off in Hawaii right now enjoying their honeymoon. But they had a truce bell, which is an Irish thing where, you know, in the wedding service, they rang the bell together holding hands. And they promised that, you know, if they were fighting ever, that one of them could go over and ring the bell, and that would remind them of that moment when there could be a truce. And they know that, you know, sometimes when we fight or when we're angry with each other or our disappointment, our expectations, our judgments that can come up, mostly from ourselves, is how we treat ourselves is normally how we treat others. And that's a beautiful thing that I want to get more understanding on, is the whole idea of having a truce bell in a home where you can just simply ring a bell and both parties know, hey, it's time for a truce. It's time to rediscover and get beyond the anger or the upset or the hurt and find that love again, knowing that we all do the best we can with what we have. So with saying that, I'm so excited for you to listen in on my chat with my good friend and someone I've spent a lot of time with over the years and plan to spend a lot more time with in the coming years, Beth Hanuszewski. So I'm really excited about the call, as I always say that. I don't know why I always say I'm really excited, but I'm really excited. Today I get to play with one of my oldest friends. We've been friends for very, very many years, too many years to count. And she really has been a great inspiration, both in my life and in my friends' lives. And I'm so excited to have you on the call. So welcome, Beth Hanuszewski.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here. You know, and Beth, you know, we've shared a very interesting story in our life together. I wonder if you can go back just for fun, because we met in a very special way. Why don't you share a little bit about how did we meet?
Oh, I love that story. This is an easy one for me to remember. So that was, oh my gosh, I don't remember what year it was. Somewhere in the 80s, 89 maybe. I don't know. It was a long time ago. And I was really trying to, I had three jobs back then. And I was, one of my jobs was a network marketing company that I was trying. And I came to this meeting and you were one of the presenters. And so there was this, thinking, wow, this guy is like just larger than life, is fantastic energy. And anyways, you were speaking at the event, and then after, people were kind of mingling, and you walked up to me and you gave me this story and said, hey, you know, I'm just traveling, I'm new in town, and you know, can you recommend some places to stay? And I started, you know, sure, yeah, I live here, and you know, so I started recommending different hotels and things in the area. And he's like, wow, like I'm, you know, on a bit of a budget, like do you have anything else that you might know? That's, you know, so I'm like trying to think of like more low-end ones. And the more we talked, then I find myself saying, he's like, well, I'm just kind of like traveling through like for the night, and I just need a place to crash. And there's something about you that I totally trusted. And I found myself eventually just saying, well, you could always like stay at my house, I guess. And you're like, great, that's awesome. And then it was so funny, because then I remember it was sort of like when, you know, then you're like, and I'm also traveling with my friend Brian. Is it okay if he stays too? I'm like, well, I guess so. So now I was, you know, one minute I was minding my business going to this meeting, and the next minute I have two complete strangers coming to spend the night with me. And so I remember you slept on the...
How long did that last?
Well, that was the funny thing, because you slept in the hallway. Because I had a one-bedroom suite in the upstairs of a house. Brian slept in the living room. You slept in the hallway in a on a sleeping bag, and you guys lived with me for a month. You stayed.
Well, welcome. There you go. And that started...
I remember there was suits hanging on the everywhere in my little apartment, and it was and then after that, I mean, like I said, we were friends ever since, and I never knew when you were going to arrive into town. It was only really in the last few years we've ever lived in the same city. So no matter who I lived with, whether it was roommates or a boyfriend or a husband, I'd always have to mention at some point, I have this friend, David, and he could show up at any time, and he may stay I don't know how long.
that little apartment was quite tiny, but how many years ago was that, just to give it context? That was
It was at least over 20 years ago.
20 years ago. So here we are today, extremely close friends, and our families break bread together frequently. But you've had an interesting journey. You're one of the top relationship coaches I consider in the world. I think your philosophies and your what you teach is practical. I have you come to my programs. You've taught at Beyond Courage a couple of times and had a massive impact on the people that come there. Truly. And simple things that are easy to understand, practical to use. And I often wonder, you know, I mean, a relationship guru as yourself, you know, how do you get there? Obviously, you know, it's not through having the perfect marriage, and it's not through having the perfect life. You've been through your ups and downs and this kind of thing. I wonder if you can take me back to when at sort of the lowest ebb of your relationships with men and probably husbands. We say husbands because there's a plural. But so obviously you've learned this. Take us back and share with us some of the things that you're going on in your life that led to this realization and to this discovery of how to really create saucy and wonderful and rich relationships.
Okay. Well, thanks. You know, first of all, I never really considered myself a guru, but, you know, because I don't know, there's something about that name that it, for me implies that I'm sort of arrived. I'm done. You know, I've arrived at the state of nirvana or complete mastery. And for me, particularly in the relationship realm, I am always on my own journey. And yeah, now, you know, come on the other side of some of my low points is, as you say, you know, the journey is a lot more joyful than it was in the past. But yeah, I mean, I didn't set out to become a relationship coach. When I even became a life coach, that wasn't my goal. My goal was to just, you know, be like a super goal setter or do leadership, or, you know, I was really inspired by the coaching industry. And this was sort of way back in 2003 is when I got my coach's certification. And so when I first started doing that, becoming a relationship was the least or the farthest thing from my mind. And but along the way, as I was trying to build my coaching practice, my marriage to Ben was really, really struggling. And, you know, it was not good. We were not in a good spot. And we had two young kids, and, you know, we were going along, and we were sort of caught into this pattern. And the pattern really was we were be really, really close, and then we would start to disconnect, and then tensions would build, and then we'd have these horrific fights where they were just not healthy. Like, I think sometimes people think the absence of conflict is a good thing, and I would say, well, not necessarily, but then when you have really, really horrible conflict, that's not necessarily a good thing either. And that was, you know, all our fights would always lead us to these divorce discussions. You know, they would be so, so deeply wounding that we'd be like, wow, maybe we shouldn't be married. Maybe we shouldn't be married. And it was just so, so, so incredibly difficult for me. And so I felt like for the longest time that I was living sort of the imposter life, you know, I was trying to be all motivating and goal setting. And here I was trying to be this inspiring coach. And I had this incredible ache of my relationship, that my relationship was not okay. And I started to feel like a farce. Like, how can I be coaching people when I don't have this area of my life together? And it was really, really difficult. And things with Ben just, you know, we tried different things. I tried different things. He was a little bit less motivated to try things, you know, but it was my industry. I had access to lots of relationship coaches and books and resources. And so I'd be like, Beth,
I want to ask you a question. Do you think it's quite common, though, in a male-female relationship where the women tend to be the more of the ones wanting to change and the men tend to be more in their cave and sort of just sort of moving along? Is that more common, or do you see it the other way as well?
Well, you know what? I would say this. There's obviously there's big differences between men and women and how we show up and how we think, how we process. Everything about men and women actually is quite a bit different. And what I'll say about this is, generally, you know, like sort of with broad brushstrokes, there's always exceptions. But generally speaking, women tend to be the caretakers of the relationship, where men are much more inclined to be the caretaker of something more practical, you know, like making sure that the mortgage is paid or the lawn is cut and that, you know, the practical aspects of life are taken care of, where women are much more wanting, you know, they don't care about the lawn, they don't care about being in debt, but they really care if that relationship is not intact. And that's what I find more than anything. So you're right, it's totally common that, when men come to my relationship talks or my workshops or events or whatever I'm doing, I'm always so, so thrilled because it's I think we're starting to see a shift where men are starting to see the benefit of investing in relationships as much as women. So, but you're right, normal, that's very common that women are like, we want to do something about a relationship, and the men are just like, I just want to stop fighting. Like, they don't really want to go to counseling. They don't want to go to a course. They just cheer up, will you?
Sweep it under the carpet. You invested really, I'd say tens of thousands of dollars and many, many years really in working with and discovering and being coached by people that inspired you, people, and not necessarily just in the relationship arena, but certainly that was an arena that organically drew you. I know a lot of coaches, and I would say that a lot of people end up coaching the things they struggle with the most. And this is one of those areas, again, where you've earned your stripes. And rather than go into the years of what you did and how you did it and where your realizations came in, I wonder if we can move to this kind of piece of what did you learn? What were the practical things that you've learned that if someone listening right now, I know how many, 80% of my students are women. You've been to a lot of my programs. You see those numbers. You know the age group they're in. And you see in their hearts that yearning for this information, and not just the women, by the way, the men too. But what is something that they could take away from this call that really is going to make a significant difference for them, that is a practical step, something that they can really utilize starting today?
Cool. Yeah, I would love to. And you know me, hate's a big strong word, but you know what, you know, but I really love when people can, you know, get something really practical and tangible tools, because you're right, it's nice to be uplifting and inspiring, but you know, let's face it, we want to do something with it. So I would love to give some of those really practical tips and save you, like you say, the years that it took me to learn these things. And the first tip I would give, and it is probably the most important tip I can give, and that tip was so, I resisted this for so long. So if anyone's listening to this and you're in a relationship that is not okay, and what happens is that you get into this very blame state, or I'll just speak for myself. I was in this completely blaming state, you know, and I associated my happiness and certainly my relationship wellness with my husband Ben changing. And, you know, I was so angry at him for all the things, all the ways that I felt he wasn't showing up for me or was letting me down or wasn't engaging or wasn't. I had a laundry list of things that I felt he could do to improve the relationship. And I felt if all those things happened, we would be totally happy. And I was convinced of that for many, many years. And, of course, he was not terribly open to this sort of tact, right? He would always just shut down. And I was like, why are you so closed? And it wasn't until the day I realized that I needed to change how I was showing up in our relationship. I need to drop the drama and the bitchiness and the accusations and the judgment of him and start being the kind of partner that he would open to. And that, I got to tell you, that was so excruciating, because it would admit I had to lay down all my blame that it was his fault, and step into the part that it was, I played a huge role in the demise of our relationship. But that is excruciating as it was for me to admit that it could be me, not him, that was causing or creating or at least perpetuating our problem, that it was liberating at the same time.
I want to stop there for a sec, because I think that this is something that I see a lot, and tell me if I'm wrong, that a lot of women get into relationships with what they think is the potential of the man, right? There's this kind of thing is like in the beginning, instead of having that clear communication, there's often that would you say that's true? There's a lot of this idea, well, you know, there's that so much potential there, and I'll fall in love with the potential as opposed to what's exactly there in that moment. Is that common as well?
Yeah, no, I think that is true. Although I don't know if even there's even a conscious awareness that that's what you're doing. But yeah, absolutely. Like we paint the, you know, you meet someone, I meet someone and I'm painting the picture, imagining them meeting my family. And, you know, we have the whole thing laid out, right? About what our life could be with them when we're that attraction and that connection that feels so strong. I think it's very natural.
So you've done this wonderful thing. You've said you've laid down your blame. You've laid it down. I love that. I love that. That conjuring of a picture in my mind. I've laid down my blame. How did you know, before you go on to step two, or even to finish up step one properly, how did you know that it was worth doing? How did you know he was worth fighting for? It was worth fighting for. I mean, there's many, many, many people before they start to say, hey, I'm going to lay down my blame and I'm going to take Beth's thing. They're in so much pain that they're already wanting to get out the door. They're already wanting to exit. I know you're working on a book right now that sort of talks about that, the questions you want to ask yourself before you left. How did you know, Beth, that this was worth it?
Well, you know, the truth is, I didn't. But the only thing I did know is that that I didn't feel like I had tried everything. And I certainly didn't try the part of where I started to change.
And knowing you from before, I know how hard that would be.
Yeah, exactly.
You were not a drama queen at all.
No, not at all. No, exactly. I like to think of myself as more passionate, and sometimes that comes out dramatic in the negative, but awesome in the positive. But yeah, you know, that's my dichotomy for sure, you know. And yeah, so that, I think that was probably, I didn't know for sure, but what I did know for sure is that I couldn't say I had tried everything, because I hadn't tried taking full responsibility and me going first. I kept waiting for him to go first. You know, I'd say, why would you do this? Why would you do that? And I just, it never occurred to me that I should go first. I mean, I was the one who was, you know, the one who was, you know, more conscious, if you call it, you know, without trying to sound condescending, but I was the one reading the stuff. I was the one flying all across the country to go to workshops and meet my teachers and mentors and learn. And I'm like, but I'm expecting Ben to go first. It was like,
yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. I got goosebumps there, because I think, you know what happens when I get goosebumps? Normally I make a lot of money or it's a great idea. But this idea, though, that you hadn't tried everything. But I think so many women, I'm talking about women right now, and I know what happens with men too. So I'm just, because we're talking about women. And guys, you've got to be listening in. Don't exit this call, because you know at the end of this call, you're going to have some tools that will really help you move into a really great relationship. So hang in there, guys, even if it sounds like we're directing this to women. The idea, though, Beth, is that we have this sort of possibility going on. You know, there's this moment where you said, hey, you know what? I'm going to try everything. I realize I got to go first. But isn't it true that most people who go after the personal development thing, they start taking courses, they start reading the books, and then they sit more in judgment of their partner as opposed to laying down the blame stick, which I love, and then going first and just being who they want their partner to be, as opposed to pointing out their faults and saying, well, you should just read this book. If you just went and did Beth's course, if you went to Dave's course, blah, blah, blah. Don't you find a lot of people do that? They get into that whole waiting game of, well, and look at him. Now I've got this information, I'm going to be even more righteous than I was before. Don't you see a lot of people get trapped in that when they start their personal growth journey?
Yeah, unfortunately, I do, and it's almost like they become what I call dangerously enlightened. You know, they're just known just enough, you know, to get where it gets dangerous, where they're not a master of their work, because if you're a master of your work, you would already know you should go first. When you're just learning it, and you start to feel very righteous. Oh, I know so much more than you, right? And so I think before true enlightenment, often, unfortunately, and definitely in my case, came righteousness first, where I thought I was much better, I was much more conscious, I was much more aware, awake, whatever term you want to use. And yeah, that, you know, and that absolutely made Ben even more close to me. So, yeah, that was, you know, a key thing. So, you know, for people listening,
so
go first.
I'm going to move you back then. So tip one is we're laying down the blame stick. I've called it a blame stick. You didn't call that. You called it a blame state, but a blame stick. And we're going first. What's next?
Okay. So the next, once you're willing to kind of step into that space of blame and take full responsibility for how you show up, that's when possibility opens. And my experience, and certainly my own and coaching many, many people, is that people leave relationships not because they want to, but because they don't know what else to do. So it's really just this lack of they lose hope. They think this relationship is it's just nothing I've tried has worked. So when I start working with people, and people often ask me, they're like, well, can you save my marriage? You know, I get these calls probably once a week. Can you save my marriage? And I always say, I have no idea. And that's not my goal, which really, you know, irritates them until they hear what my rationale is. Because I'm not in the business of saving marriages. That's not for me to decide. Only the people in those relationships can decide if they want to stay together. But what I'm in is in the business of relationship transformation. And what I mean by that is I always ask people to rate their relationship out of 10, meaning 10 out of 10, it couldn't get any better, and 0 out of 10, it couldn't get any worse. So depending on where you are at with that, I always say, you know, what's your number? And I'll ask the couple, you know, what's your number out of 10? And you know, some will say it's 6, and some will say it's 4, and some will say it's 2, and some will say it's minus 10. And whatever that number is, I say, listen, this is what I would suggest, is to transform the relationship, meaning do the work to bring that relationship to 10 out of 10, so that there's peace, there's harmony, there's love, there's all of those good things in your relationship, and then decide if you want to stay together. Because from that place, you'll make beautiful decisions. You know, if you have children, you'll make better decisions for your kids. They're not going to be scarred up. You're not going to have expensive lawyer bills if you decide to have what I call a divine divorce. Or if you bring your relationship 10 out of 10, you might think, well, why on earth would I leave this person? Well, and that happens too. So that's really step two, is not make a decision about should I stay or should I go. But it's about where can I begin to grow that relationship closer to 10 out of 10 so I can make the most, best, and conscious, loving decision about how to exit or stay in this partnership.
Yeah, I know that you and I share a lot of the same philosophies around, you say divine divorce, or, and I call it an elegant separation, or, and, you know, you've witnessed that. I've talked about it on a couple of my podcasts, you know, how myself with Pam, or even with Michelle, you know, a couple of my exes, and you're great friends with both of them, that, you know, it really is possible to have a divine divorce. It really is possible to have an elegant separation. And I'm not going to focus there right now, but I just want people to hear that, because there's so many people out there. You see it all the time, Beth, where there's so much negativity and darkness and just hatred and all these other things going through that, which is just insidious. It's seeping into the children. It's seeping into everything they think and do. But, I mean, it truly is possible to have a divine divorce, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, it's not complicated to do that. But that's, you know, I say it's actually quite simple. There's really simple strategies, but it does require, it doesn't mean it's easy though. It does require a commitment to really do that work with the person, you know, because I believe that when we draw people to us, particularly if you draw somebody to you that you end up in conflict with, that there's great gifts in that. There's a lesson there that is that will allow you to grow at a real, you know, sort of soul level, if you would, or real at an evolutionary level. When you have something in your life that is challenging you, you know, particularly in our relationships, it's inviting you to grow. There's something to be learned there. And I always say, learn the lesson with the one you're with. Otherwise, you're just going to attract a new person with the same lesson.
That's so beautiful.
Learn that lesson. Learn that lesson with them, and then leave if you want. But then you won't repeat your pattern, your cycle, and all the same relationship mistakes won't show up again in your next relationship.
Yeah, and let's go with that. I mean, we've gone to this sort of lay down the blame stick, going first, not making this decision, sort of creating that 10 out of 10 to transform it into a relationship, then decide if it's time to go, right? Then decide if you want to stay.
Yes.
What's where do we go next?
Well, the next step, I think, is a really beautiful step. And again, it's not what we normally do. Because certainly, you know, back to, you know, my own, when I'm in a place where I'm not feeling like my needs are getting met in my relationship, that's what, you know, all our conversations are me basically, you know, asking, begging, demanding, bitching, whining, complaining, various and sundry ways that I would do this. But I was always, my focus was always the same, saying, give me what I need, give me what I need, give me what I need. Right? And here's where, if you really want to make a powerful shift in your relationship, you have to switch it from me, you know, I focus to them and go, you know, it wasn't again until I sat down and said, am I giving Ben what he needs? And it was, again, it was this, you know, and it was awful, awful, awful moment where I asked that question. I had the courage to ask it out loud because I couldn't even remember the last time I even thought of what he needed in the relationship.
And be honest, I mean, Beth, and we're talking about, you know, you guys actually separated for a short time. I mean, you actually left the house and, or he did or whatever. I mean, this was some hard times you're going through. I mean, we're not talking about you having just fights here and there and it being dark. I mean, you guys were really on the edge of leaving each other. So I just want people to get that this was not, I mean, this was really about you fighting for something. And you have two amazingly beautiful children. And you have, you're just an awesome couple to hang around with. And you have beautiful friends. So, you know, I always tip my hat to you as a living example of a kick-ass relationship. And you know this program is all about the kick-ass life. So I just want to say, but you were going through some real tough times, right? I mean, some real tough decisions, right?
Oh, yeah. It was, you know, I think probably the lowest point was, it seems so far away now, but it was 2006, and we were getting prepared as a family to move to Victoria. So we were, you know, moving our house, packing up everything. Everything was in motion. Ben had given his leave at his job. I mean, everything was on the road, like literally almost packing the truck for Victoria. And, you know, we had one of, you know, those other, like, just complete bring you to your knees kind of arguments, and we just, yeah, it was done. It was like literally we were done. And yeah, right, I left the house. It was devastating. And for, you know, 3 or 4 days, I thought for sure nothing was going to happen that I envisioned was going to happen. We weren't going to move. We were going to separate. You know, the kids were, you know, it was just, I just have never cried so hard and for so long and prayed every day for a miracle. And you're right. It was, you know, it wasn't certainly that wasn't the only question I asked myself. But when we finally came back together and reconciled, that was where I had to go. I had to be willing, even though Ben didn't say to me, I'm going to give you everything you need. He didn't make any promises to me, but I knew that I was not giving him what he needed. And again, it comes back to, I had to go first. If I wanted to keep my family together, and I did, I mean, I know not everybody, but I really did. I really believed, because there was these pockets of moments in our relationship where I just felt that we weren't done. You know when you feel like this relationship has come to the end, you know, whether it's a employee or a friendship or a lover, you just kind of, you feel like you're, it's complete. I have never felt that I was complete with Ben, and that's why I kept kind of going deeper, another layer. And, you know, and that, when we kind of came back and talked, and I just committed to him, that almost is more to myself, that I would give him what he needed. And I made a decision that if I gave him everything he needed, I took total responsibility for how I showed up, and I did everything I could to bring our relationship to 10 out of 10. If at the end of that sort of a set time period, and I think maybe that's important, people need to have some gauge, you know, not with a big expectation, but at least some sort of timeline of how long you're going to completely give it everything you have.
How long, Beth? I mean, I know I've watched you work with a very close friends of ours, or now yours. I mean, they were close friends of mine that I asked them to work with you. And you really created a massive transformation. I think you're, I've heard them describe you as an angel. But the how long is the period that's, I mean, if someone's listening in, what is the period? Is it 6 months? Is it 5 months? Is it a year? I mean, what's a reasonable amount of time that you say we should work on this?
Well, you know, that's a tough question to ask. I mean, obviously the more time you can give, the more likely that relationship will shift. And so I can't really answer what is the ideal time, but I would say that I would at least, you know, as a minimum, and some people can't even imagine, you know, another week, right? So you have to kind of go in and go, how much could I really give? And I think the important thing before you answer how long can you, kind of what is your timeline, I think you have to be so, so crystal clear about what would be, what if you're wrong? Because I think sometimes people stand in that place, and I know the couple you speak of, and you know, they're convinced, really, that it was not going to work, you know? And, you know, we worked together, and I said, what if you're wrong? What if you're wrong? What would that mean to your family, to your life, to your stress, to your business? What if you're wrong and you actually could transform this relationship? What would that be worth to you? And so that's kind of the question you have to think of. What would it be worth to you if you were wrong about not being able to transform it and you just gave it your all? And so I like, as a minimum, if, you know, 90 days. Because a month, you know, you give up quick in a month. Give it 90 days, ideally a year.
But, you know, what we're seeing, though, Beth, I mean, just to give it some context, is that obviously in that 90 days, you're seeing movement. If we're moving from a 10 to 10, if after 90 days, it's still exactly the same toxicity and nothing's shifting, but if there's in that, you're expecting to see some shifts, you're expecting to see people working together on something, as having new communications, having more openness. So, I mean, there is hope. Because you start to see something. I mean, you wouldn't be staying if it was 4 months later and it was exactly the same as it was day one and you felt exactly the same way and there was no movement. I mean, obviously, you're going to see something in that time frame, right?
Absolutely. Well, and here's the thing, you know, when you're showing up with, you know, some of the tools and principles and techniques that I teach are, you know, are pretty simple, but if you are consistent with them, I've never not seen a change. There's no way. There's just absolutely no way that there can be no shift. And from that place, we build momentum. And from that place, you start to build lasting habits, because, you know, that's really at the crux of relationship transformation, is not so much about what, you know, people always want to know, you know, what is the magic thing to say, or what are the perfect words to ask for something, or how do you show appreciation in the perfect way? And it's not so much the words, although, you know, there are some good verbiage versus, you know, not so good verbiage that you can use with people, but it's really about what do you do consistently over time? Because that is the key to relationship transformation, is not what you do one time. Not what you do spectacularly. It's what can you do consistently.
I have a question for you, because I think I'm just writing this down actually. But you said something, when I gave him everything I want. Well, one thing that went through my mind is a lot of women that I work with who have lost their identity. They feel invisible. They feel like they have no voice. Often can be in a toxic relationship where, you know, in that situation where the person they're with totally rides over them. If when you say give everything they want, I have a sense I understand what you mean intuitively. But if you're with an asshole, right, and someone's being, you know, and you really want to work on it, but where is the line between giving everything that you feel they want and having that level of self-respect and dignity and strength and power to be able to speak? Can you talk a little bit about that so someone doesn't misinterpret what that means?
Yeah, no, that's really, really great. And absolutely, and you're right, there are women that I'm coaching, you're right, that are with what I call, difficult to inspire men.
Shall
right?
we say dickhead? No. Oh, sorry, I didn't say that, did I? That didn't come out my mouth. Was that my outside voice, Beth? I can't believe I said that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but you know what? And I think that, oh my gosh, you know, that every woman has to, again, answer that question myself. And, you know, that's what I'm going to talk about in a lot more depth in my book about what are the kind of, they're really to explore the questions for you. And when I say give everything I need, that they need, it's really about creating opening in another person. So, for example, practically, you know, when, I talk a lot about the currency. So when I say people look for things in relationship, and so what the masculine or men who run a lot of masculine energy are looking for is, for example, appreciation. That would be one example of something the masculine really appreciates from the feminine or women who run feminine energy. And so when I say give them what you need, it has been 6 months or 6 years or what, 16, whatever, since you've actually showed authentic appreciation, that's what I mean by give that. Now, if you're giving appreciation, so, you know, your husband or your partner, he comes home, he does something nice for you, and you have to be authentic about it. You have to find, you're like, well, he doesn't do anything. He's a, like you say, he's a total asshole. There's nothing he does. I'm like, well, there's probably something. So look for something he's truly doing, whether it's providing, whether it's helping with the kids, whether it's whatever he's doing, find something and appreciate it from a place of open heart. And if you do that consistently for 30 days and he still is a complete jerk, then you'll have to really look at, you know, listen, that would be an example of where you're giving, they're not, they're doing nothing. And you can say, listen, I know for sure that I'm giving, I'm opening, I'm giving him every opportunity to reciprocate and create a flow of love between us. Because that's what happens is when you give someone their currency, they start to open to you. But if you are dealing with someone who is completely closed, completely, you know, a jerk or completely abusive, then you're right. Then you have to make a decision where, like, you know for yourself that you showed up beautifully, gave him everything he needs, and he's a jerk. So for sure, I don't advocate staying in that relationship.
But you
can leave that without anger.
Yeah, yeah. You're touching on something here, which again, I the show is not long enough for us to delve into all of this, and we'll have you back on. And luckily, I know where you live. But the idea, though, that there's a few things that when someone's working through this situation where they want, and the relationship doesn't have to be bad. You actually alluded to that a moment ago. It doesn't have to be fighting. It could be apathy is almost worse, where you're just like roommates. You're laying in the same bed and the sparks disappeared. So we're not talking about necessarily just a fighting situation. But you're talking about the things that a man wants. There are three key areas and with women as well. And I alluded to it in one of my, I did a little podcast, which is called Love's Little Secrets. And I mentioned you on there and I talked about this whole idea about creating safety. So it's not like there's a million things. There's a few key strategies. There's a few key things that we could be working on that really have massive benefit and are proven, and you know, through all the work you've done, really are the critical pieces of the puzzle that a woman needs and a man's needs. I wonder if you could just quickly, briefly go over that, and then we can finish up on your steps. I mean, we're at step three right now, switch from the I focus to the them focus. And I'm sure there's the other steps there, but do you want to quickly touch on those so people can just hear it? And we'll do a whole show on those. We'll do a whole show so people can get the real nuts and bolts of it.
Great. Absolutely. So what I teach is, you know, again, really simple formula, what I call, you know, sort of the happily ever after formula or happiness formula or bliss formula. You can call it whatever formula you want, but I really believe in simplicity. So I like, you know, really three things in threes are about max, because I think when you have 101 steps, you won't do them. Even, you know, 8.5 steps, you're not going to do it. So here's the formula. It's E as in energy plus V as in value plus C as in currency equals H, or happy. And this is what I mean by that formula, because this is the combination of these three things. If you just did these three things, most relationships on the planet would shift and get better. Now, of course, there's relationships with, you know, a whole lot of pathology, a whole lot of history, and a whole lot of woundedness, that it's not as easy as just, you know, A, B, C like this. But I'm going to tell you that most relationships will shift, not just intimate ones, but all man-woman relationships or masculine-feminine relationships. So I'll just quickly as I can just kind of touch on them. And you're right, we can go do a whole call on really how really to live these out practically. But the E stands for energy. And what I mean by energy, you know, I'm not talking about chi or feng shui or anything like that. I'm really referring to the masculine and the feminine. And these are the energies of the masculine or the energies of the feminine that are sort of, you get when you embody certain characteristics. So Dave, you know this work well. So if I said to you, give me some feminine characteristics that bring out feminine energy, what kind of characteristics am I talking about?
To bring out the best in a woman, you mean, or the negative?
No, like what would you consider some feminine traits? Like if I said, you know, is you know, spontaneous, is that a feminine quality, or is that a masculine quality?
More of a masculine quality.
Spontaneity?
Is feminine.
Yeah, totally feminine. And what if I said changeable?
Changeable? Masculine.
Yeah, like you change your mind. You know, I want to go here. I want to go there. I want to go here. You know, actually, that is very feminine, to be changeable.
Okay, see how bad I am? So you're going to put me on the spot here, and we're going to go through.
You
did this last time to me as well, and I it's so great. No, I love it. I love it. But
okay,
yeah, so,
sorry.
No, it's great.
But
I love it.
So you know, yeah. So changeable, being spontaneous.
But I'm being a male here. So look at that. See,
exactly.
So guys, no, you got to listen up, guys. This is important stuff. So that's exactly it. We think we know, but and I even teach this stuff, and somebody's like, really, is it right? So carry on, Beth.
Yeah. Anyways, so feminine, and then there's masculine. So masculine, you probably would be much better at. So masculine is like being focused, like you are now, right? Being steadfast, being competitive, being strong, being protective. All of that is masculine. Linear, you know, doing one thing at a time as opposed to multitasking. The feminine is very good at multitasking. Now, I just want to make a quick distinction, because people are like, well, do you mean men and women? Because here's the thing. Whether you're a man or a woman, you run both masculine and feminine energy. But here's the thing. The degree that you run which percentage you're masculine or which percentage you're feminine will be the degree to which you are attractive or not attractive to the opposite sex. And so...
So just to be clear, just to be clear on that, because I think a lot of people might have skipped over that. Well, there's a lot of guys who run feminine energy, and there's a lot of women that run masculine energy. So when we talk about this as an energy, we're not talking about whether you have a penis or not. We're talking about whether you are running masculine or feminine energy. And there's a lot of us men who are more metrosexual. Is that the word? I don't know. But who have that kind of feminine side and a masculine side. There's a lot of men who are fully masculine. But there's also a lot of women, a lot of men who have a very, very deep feminine side. Isn't that what we're talking about here?
Yes, totally. And I'm not saying that you can't tap into your feminine or your masculine, but it's knowing when and how to do that. And that's the kind of piece that, you know, that I teach people practically how to do it. But at least what I'm going to give you is this is what you deserve from a conceptual point of view, understanding that it really matters what energy you run. And so when I say masculine and feminine, I don't just mean what I call the light side, which is sort of what we associate the good parts of those characteristics. Like, you know, it's great to feel like you're spontaneous or flowing or empathetic or beautiful or protective or all these things. But there's also what we call the dark side. So the dark feminine or the dark masculine. And what the dark feminine looks like is to be manipulative and whiny and bitchy and submissive. Those are all dark feminine characteristics. Whereas masculine dark looks like controlling and violent, aggressive, abusive, closed. All of that is very dark masculine. So bringing this back to the formula, when I say E, plus B equals C. What I mean is bring your best light energy to the relationship. So if you at your core, right, are masculine, then bring the light masculine to that relationship. Be strong, be protective, be, you know, care, you know, take care of the feminine. If you want to bring your light feminine to the masculine, bring that peace, bring the empathetic, bring the nurturing, bring the radiant, bring the inspiring part of you. Bring that, bring that light feminine, as opposed to most people when they relationships are in trouble, everybody's in the dark energy, and so often they're switched, right? So you got women who are controlling, men who are whining, and vice versa, and it's messy, and nobody is going to be attracted to each other when you're in the dark or in opposite energies.
What I love about this, and this is where I've learned the lesson, even though I might not articulate when you check on those questions of the energy.
What I'm using
in my own life right now is if I'm seeing the worst coming out of my partner, what I look at now, instead of that, I look at what am I doing inside of me? What energy am I carrying that maybe, all right, bringing that out in her? And I make the shift in me. And what I found is when I go in and I'm in my light, present, connected, self, and I'm really there, then I watch this shift, this emergence of this light energy. And that's what you talked about in the three steps that we talked about, is that when you took that responsibility, you went first, you showed up. This is where it all starts to make sense. This is where the puzzle starts to come out. And when I practice this in my own relationships, guess what? I see the results.
Yeah, I know. And it's amazing. It's amazing how quickly, and you know, people think that relationships, you know, happen over months. That can happen in a moment. That the moment that you're aware is the moment where you can shift, right? When you notice someone's in the dark, most people then join them in the dark, right? You're like, you're in bitchy, I'm bitchy. You know, we get in there, right? And we're in it with them. And I call it, you know, kind of go down a rabbit hole. But if you notice, in that moment you notice your partner is in dark energy, go to the light. And bring them to the light. And it's incredible. If you can hold
Well, when
that
you say
space,
help bring them, there's something I've learned, which is careful. It's not a question of going over there and pointing out their darkness to bring them over. It's a question of being in the light so that there's a shift in them that is actually unquestionable. It's not something you have to articulate. Honey, come on. Look, I'm being all light now. Come on, you got to come out here too. It's like she's going to tell you to go piss off, right?
But totally. Yeah, and thank you for even just cleaning up my own languaging on that, because when I say bring to the light, what I mean is really invite them to that space by you going there. Right? Nobody wants to be told what to do, but when you lead, when you just go there, they'll follow. They'll come over there naturally without being told, like you say, you know, you're on the dark side, go to the light, that's just going to get you the finger, you know.
I think that what we'll do, though, Beth, on this particular chord, it's a great, I think we've given enough of the E plus V plus C equals the happiness formula. We'll come back and do that on another show because we only have a few minutes left. And I really want to stay on your steps. And, you know, you remember what it was, lay down the blame stick, go first, not make the decision to stay or go until you've tried, you know, brought it to a 10 out of 10, switch from the I focus to the them focus. Can we just talk about any other steps that you think are important there as we round out the show?
Well, I think that and you're right. I mean, there are lots of other things that I could offer, but I think what I would say is one of the most important things is as you move into like just practicing some of these tools, practicing stepping into this work and really immersing yourself, is get support. I think that is a critical step because. You know, and it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, with a paid coach, but if you have a conscious girlfriend or a good group of guys that can hold you accountable, I mean, I think that's the biggest point, that people, you know, don't stay accountable to what they say they're going to do. And I think that you can learn all the great tools. You can go to the most inspiring workshops. You can read the best books. You can download. I mean, goodness knows you can spend, you know, there's a thousands and thousands of free, I mean, you yourself, your podcast, right? People could spend hours and learn so much for absolutely free. But why are we all not sort of rich, happy, and, you know, healthy? because we don't do it. We say we're going to do it, and we don't. And so my biggest call to action would be to get yourself into some sort of place, whether it's a friend, a mastermind, a coach, a group, something where you will actually do the work. You will meet with people and you'll say, they'll say, what did you do? That, you know, what are you doing about your dreams, your goals, your practices? Because that, I think, changes from I'm thinking about doing it to then truly doing it. And I think you would agree, you know, in this whole, you know, kick-ass life, you yourself, right, embody this so beautifully. I mean, I don't know anybody as fearless as you about doing what you say you're going to do. You're like, I remember when you decided you're going to become a pilot and you said, I'm going to become a pilot. And I'm going to do, I only have a month. And everybody at the pilot place or the air, whatever, hangar, they're all like, you can't do it in a month. You're like, yes, I can. Nobody does it in a month. You're like, well, I'm doing it. And you just made it public. You just said, I'm going for it, and you do it. And I think the difference between doing it and not doing it is making sure that somebody is supporting you, tracking you, or you're accountable to.
So
people
Beth,
will follow through.
Yeah, Beth, and that's great. That's a great way to end us out. But I want to ask you one last question, and I'm sort of running over time here a little bit, but I think it's so valuable what you're bringing. What is a kick-ass life?
Pardon me?
If we have to answer the question, you know, the program's called The Kick-Ass Life. What is a kick-ass life to you?
Well, to me, you know, kick-ass is a little bit masculine for me. So, but when I think of kick-ass, to me, it's just when I am in total bliss. So I kind of put my own feminine spin on what kick-ass means to me. And it's when my life feels blissful. And that to me is a kick-ass life where I have ease in my, you know, in every area of the life of my life, not just my relationship life, but my health and my money and my friendships, and everything just feels in bliss. When I've created ease in all of those areas, I feel like I have a kick-ass life.
Great. Well, Beth, we will have you back. I really appreciate you so much. You know how much I love you. And sharing the journey together as closely as we do, it's awesome. And so thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, like I mentioned, there are so many gems in there, and it's one of those shows that you can listen to a couple of three times. And I will have I'll have Beth back again. She's a remarkable human being, and someone I have a lot of time for. And as I just about to wander down the beach right now and have a sundowner in this most magical place on earth, I want you to know you're with me. You know, I was reading some people had left some comments on the Kick-Ass Life Facebook page in my private messages, and feel free to post those out in the open, guys, if you have something you want to share about the show. But you know, I feel this great sense of responsibility to really keep refining the show and bringing some of the great minds of the world to the show. And also, you know, from a personal point of view, when I hear people who have you know, it's impacted them to treat their lovers, their children, their friends, their work differently, that there's really as a mindset where they feel by plugging in and challenging their own thought process is that they've really been able to find a different way of seeing the world. And as I sit here in this most magical place and realize how fortunate my life is and deeply overwhelmed with gratitude, and knowing that my children are at home being loved by their mom, and I'm soon to be home, and we have a trip planned as soon as I get home. We're off to Belize for a couple of weeks, Jen and I and the boys. I'm so excited about that. But just, you know, really knowing that a kick-ass life is something we all deserve, and that it really comes down to how we think and how we open our heart up to the world. So with that said, I just want to thank Beth and remind you, you know, you can go to her website, Mindset Coaching. So mindsetcoaching.com, and check her out, Beth Hanuszewski, and keep an eye out for her book, because it will be out. And when it comes out, I'm telling you, it's going to be one of those Bibles for relationships. Anyway, I'll see you on the other side, guys. And if I sound a little bit chill, it's because I'm a little bit chill. And we've got big adventures planned for the next few days. So I'll let you know what's happening when I speak to you on the other side.
That was kick-ass.